comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. The Alternative Universe Eye Conference for May ticket sales opened today. And there has already been a rush for the tickets. And that's fantastic. That's great. And you need to rush right over to my website and click that link and get your ticket. Alternative Universe Eye Conference is a conference. But instead of you having to travel to a conference, instead of you having to, you know, pay for airplane tickets and pay for hotel rooms and extra meals at restaurants and ground transportation or long-term parking, none of that, from the comfort of your home or office, wherever you choose to watch, we stream the conference directly to you. Now, this is not a situation where there's a conference room full of people and the speakers are speaking to those people and you just get to watch. This is entirely directed to you. So the speakers are speaking straight to you. And then at the end of each presentation, there is a question and answer time, so you can ask your questions of the speaker just as you would if you were in a conference hall somewhere. Pretty cool, huh? Well, there's something else cool about it. The whole structure of the Alternative Universe Eye Conference is different, and it enables us to make the tickets available to you not at $100 or $200 or $300 per ticket, $10 per ticket. Now, you can't beat that. You can't match that anywhere. Nobody is going to make it possible for you to attend a conference of any kind, especially a conference with the high-quality presenters that we bring to you, for $10. So you need to get over there and click where it says Alternative Universe Eye Conference and then buy your ticket for $10. You've already missed two of them. If this is your first one, you've missed two of them. Don't miss the third one. There's no genius in not being there for this. So get your ticket, okay? I need also to mention to you that tonight is free to watch night. Now that means that, normally you have to be a member of our community, of our members' community, in order to watch the shows live. But tonight is free to watch. We do that a couple of times each month to make it possible for people to get a little sampling of just one of the things that's in our members' community. So tonight's the night, and if you're not watching, well, you could be. Just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says watch. That pretty much does it for you right there. That's pretty simple. And then you can get in on tonight's show. My guest is Dr. Brooks Agnew. I think you're going to enjoy this. We'll be back right after this break. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As we went away for break, I told you that our guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. It's always a real pleasure to have him with us, and he's always got great information. Before I bring him up online so that you can hear him and see him if you're watching, which you should be doing because this is free to watch night. Okay, before I do that, I want to address the picture of Dr. Agnew that you see on my website, we've superimposed his face on a motorcycle rider, and we have a caption that says "Racing toward discovery at breakneck speed," and there is actually a reason for that. Dr. Brooks Agnew, welcome back to the show. And you want to explain my picture to people?
Sure, sure. Thank you for having me back on, Kevin.
Sure.
Last Thursday I had a two-vehicle accident, and my vehicle happened to be a motorcycle, so I got the worst end of it, obviously. So that's the reason for it. You see my wonderful neck brace on tonight. Got to have this on for 6 weeks, but all is good. Nothing's broken. A few fractures here and there, bruises, scrapes, but I'm here with full faculties, ready to talk about Alienated Nation.
Well, I'll tell you what. With that neck brace, if you had a black cape and just the right helmet, you could have done this show as Darth Vader tonight. Yeah. Oh my goodness. You are, you heard me talk about the Alternative Universe Eye Conference, and folks, you might, I'll just give you a little sneak peek at what's coming. He has agreed to be with us in next month's conference. So, Dr. Brooks Agnew will be a part of next month's Alternative Universe Eye Conference, and I'm telling you, we just don't do anything less than first class here. And I think you will really enjoy it. So, but you're going to enjoy this month's conference, too. Have you seen that lineup? Good gracious. Get your ticket. You've written a number of books over the years. This one, Alienated Nation, is actually quite a bit different from what you've written in the past. It's not in the same genre, really, is it?
No, it isn't. The first four books were in the archaeology / physics realm, which were very well read. They all went to the top of the charts in Amazon. The fifth one was called Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, and it was a mathematical formula, methodology, for making the law of attraction unlock the bounty of the universe for you. Really shows how resonance theory, chaos theory, and Fibonacci sequencing with respect to putting your intention into the universe can unlock the bounty of the universe, and I am living proof that that does work. This one I have had in the hopper for, I'm going to say 10 years. I was waiting for the right time to bring it out and finish it. Alienated Nation, because, you know, I'm all the time discussing the political science as well as the economic science of how society works, how government works, how our world government works. This subject has always fascinated me, and I needed a way to approach it that was apolitical. That is to say, not Democrat, not Republican, not, you know, anti-liberal or conservative. This is more issues-driven, and it centers around what has happened to our country in the last 300 years since the writing of the Constitution, the formulation of the colonies and our relationship with Great Britain, and where we are today. And I feel that this is the right time. We have had some key elections in the past, but nothing like the position we are now. The world is in the right position. The United States of America is in the right position. And a key decision must be made this time, and so it was the right time to bring this book out. And I stayed in the chair and finished the book, and it went live today on Amazon.
So people can get your book at Amazon.
And your listeners can get it at alienatednation.com. And if they go there, they can follow a link to the audio. Once they buy the book, they'll be directed to a link which will provide them the entire book in audio for free. So if they buy the paperback, they're going to get it autographed, and they're going to get the entire audio version read by me for free.
Well, there you go, folks. I had no idea that that offer would be made, but that's a good thing. And thank you, Dr. Agnew. That's a good thing. Alienated Nation. You start off in actually in the introduction or foreword saying, you know, that you're a scientist, you're an engineer, and how does someone who studied how to build manufacturing processes, all the parts of a manufacturing process, how does someone like that end up writing a book like Alienated Nation? And I think it would be good if you could address that. How did that happen? Oh, by the way, we can hear thunder in the background, and we were
loud.
Do what?
There's a storm going on outside, so you're going to hear and see lightning. This is my window right over here in my library, so you're going to see lightning in that. But it should pass all right.
Yeah, we were chatting before we went on the air, and Dr. Agnew told me that there was a lightning storm going on out there, and so we hope that you don't get knocked off the air. But how did somebody like you wind up writing a book like this?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, passions run high energy. And when you're passionate about science, you're passionate about going after the truth. And one of the things that frustrates me in my genre of physics and engineering and commercial science is that there are often professionals in my area of expertise that routinely throw out data. In other words, they don't present all the truth. They only present what truth aligns with their ideology, their particular point of hypothesis. But they don't present any of the information that would refute the hypothesis or throw it into doubt. And so thus, generation after generation, we inherit all of this science, which turns out to be folly. Because eventually, the flaw in their facts is going to be made known, and we're gonna figure out that, unfortunately or fortunately, Earth is round, it's not flat. And that same modus transfers over to the beautiful process of politics. Now, a lot of people think politics is dirty. It is not. It can be, just like science can be. It can be a religion, just like churches can be. And we certainly have seen that with our two-party system in our country. We see an ideology that is put forward, and we have seen one party block another party from having any kind of success simply because it would give that party some power in a particular Congress or a congressional session. That kind of stuff has to end. We have seen now, predictably, just as we said in the Arc of Millions of Years series, country after country and now continent after continent go through the economic collapse that we predicted in Volume 2 in a chapter called Return of the Watchers. This is a very ancient alchemical process that's been taking place for a long time. Slowly but surely, they've been condensing all of the currencies into a few, all of the economies into a few central banks, and the situation is just right so the whole thing can be put into a box and controlled by a very small number of people. Unfortunately, you and I, and most of America, most people that are free, that are enterprising, that are innovative, are outside that box, which means we're not included in that system of support. So I felt compelled to write this book called Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty, to let people know they are not alone. In fact, it's not just common people like you and me, average voters or even non-voters, that are going through this. Specifically, what I'm addressing in the book is that there are now 40 states that have signed sovereignty acts. I don't know if you know what that is, but we'll discuss it tonight so that you know what it is. That is so significant to being able to not seize control, but to make adjustments to the Constitution in order to prevent what you've heard called the shadow government. It has a real name. It isn't just a shadow government that nobody knows about. Oh, we know about it. We talk to it every day if you deal with the government like I do. We call it the agency government. We deal with agencies, and we deal with secretaries of those agencies, which might as well be called ministers. Might as well be called the Minister of Environmental Protection and the Minister of Defense, just like you would see in a third world country or any other plutocracy that's out there or has been that you've read about in history.
Well, in fairness, though, now, look, there are some nations that are definitely not third world who have a parliamentary system, and they don't have secretaries. They do have ministers and a prime minister. And, I mean, I don't think anybody would say that Great Britain or the United Kingdom is third world.
No, but here's the difference, especially in the parliamentary system you just mentioned. Those ministers are elected. Our ministers, which we call the secretaries, are not elected. They're appointed.
Point taken.
Yeah, there is no recourse. There's no representation. The trillions of dollars of taxation which these agencies, departments, bureaus, and administrations lay upon we the people are without representation. That is a violation of the Constitution. Unfortunately, there's no tool in the Constitution to expunge them from federal power. And that's why this book was written. It's a call to action. I specifically talk about certain amendments that must be repealed and amendments that must be passed.
Okay, so how is it, I mean, I know that people that listen to this show are quite aware of the fact that I say we don't talk about politics, and I've explained before the difference between talking about politics and talking about fundamental issues contained in the Constitution, and those fundamental issues, by the way, are also contained in the international conventions on human rights, freedom of speech, for instance. And so these are issues that are, well, they should be globally important, and they really do not devolve to Democrats, Republicans, etc. But how is it, right, this book that we're talking about and the subject we're talking about, how is it that that doesn't fall into the realm of politics?
It's politics, it's government, and there's a huge difference. The politics is the party gyrations and gerrymandering that are done in order to control the purse strings and power of government. Government is supposed to be empowered only by the will of the people. And for a while, it did go that way. Now, one of the things that we commonly hear is that, oh, the Founding Fathers had no idea that we would ever get to be this big. The things that they thought of back in 1700s have no application to what we're doing now. That is just simply not true. The Founding Fathers that crafted the base for this and the base for the convention that passed it were well familiar with an empire much larger than the United States of America. In its day, the most advanced and most powerful army in the entire world. It was often said the sun never set on the British Empire. The Founding Fathers knew exactly what would happen if too much power rested with one man, or even one party. That's why they crafted the system that they did. They not only knew that this would happen, they foresaw it. And they tried to put safeguards into the Constitution that would prevent the very America that we have today from forming. So we're not talking about politics. We are talking about government, whether it's going to survive or not.
That's well put. I have not heard that stated before, but it certainly is self-evident that they foresaw and put into the Constitution safeguards to try and prevent the very America, the formation of the very America that we have today. Some people have begun now to they no longer talk about the shadow government as much as, because it's kind of stepped out of the shadows now and it's kind of in your face. And they've begun to call it the Fourth Reich. What do you think?
I have heard that term as well. And it's not too far off, I don't reckon. If you get to work inside these agencies, you have a chance to submit a grant application or a loan application, or you're going for some certification, or you're trying to introduce a new product, you have to go through the FDA or the EPA or the DOT. You'll see what this government is like. It is not a government that is represented by elected officials in Congress. Congress has almost no idea what these agencies are doing. In fact, the agencies have written for themselves rules which have the force of law, regulations that have the force of law, that actually make it illegal for Congress to question them about anything. They can't even be on the phone call with a constituent that's trying to work through a problem with one of these agencies. It's actually illegal. So they have done a very effective job in separating themselves from elected government, and they have made themselves into what we have affectionately called the bureaucracies. You've heard of bureaucrats, and you've heard generations of leaders complain about bureaucrats. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about largely incompetent people who have a job, belong to a union, get a paycheck, which we pay for, and they write hundreds of regulations a week, thousands of regulations a month that have the force of law. They use the court system, which we call litigious legislation. That is to say, suing companies, suing individuals, suing Americans every day and winning cases allows them to write regulations that have the force of law. They can also post new regulations in a publication we call the Federal Register. If you don't read the register and you don't protest that regulation within 30 days, guess what? It becomes law. And once it becomes law, it becomes the basis to write another one, and another one, and another one. And I specifically go into several of these agencies, which started to be set up during Roosevelt's election, and I discuss how it came about, why they put it in place, and where it's gone from there. People that read this book are going to have a real eye-opener, but the beauty of the book is you realize we are not lost yet.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. And that's good news that we're not lost yet. So I want to hear how it is we're not. Because I think a lot of people think it's pretty much over. At least for those who like the Constitution. We'll be back right after this.
Smith Show, a place where you can get information that's out of this world.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Dr. Brooks Agnew. And as we went away for break, Dr. Agnew, you were telling us that all is not lost yet.
Yeah, that's true. I hope my sound level's much better. You asked me to set it up, so I can't lean down to the microphone.
Yeah, I understand.
What we really have seen is a level of frustration come up with the American people. And this has spread to the various state legislatures. We've seen this happen before in our country. Back in the 1850s, we saw a separation occur in our country between the northern states and the southern states. And I try to draw a distinct delineation between slavery. That wasn't really the issue. It was an issue of taxation, of tariffs, of control of industry. The South was sparsely populated and so didn't have a lot of congressional power. The North was densely populated, had a tremendous amount of congressional power. senators were not enough to protect the state's rights in the South, and so the federal structure was set up so that it highly benefited the northern states. That is to say, the southern states, revenue was collected from them from the cotton that they produced, which they sold to the northern mills, because, you know, all the big mills were up in the Boston area at that time. And the excess cotton was then traded to Europe for hard goods like pianos and farm equipment and tools and things like that, which would come back from Europe. Well, the federal government would tax the cotton going out. Then they would tax the tools and the furniture and finished goods, books and things like that, that came back from Europe coming in. So the South was being double taxed. Dozens, hundreds of speeches were made on the floor of the Congresses to try to turn this around, and nothing would dissuade the North from their path. And so it really, when you read the sovereignty acts that these various states passed from 1850 to almost 1860, the passion in those words, which I include almost word for word in the book, is very much like the passion that we're reading in the sovereignty acts that are being written today. Yes, there are sovereignty acts being written today by states. Well, as you know, for a constitutional convention to take place, you could have it, but then it takes two-thirds of the states to ratify any amendment that's made. Now, the conventions themselves have historically been a free-for-all, except in the very early days where it took a long time for legislators to travel to these conventions. The first ones there obviously got to set up the structure, like Madison and Adams. They're the ones that set up the structures for the conventions, and so they were orderly, and they were intelligent, and they were logical. Modern-day conventions have been anything but that. For instance, we passed a prohibition, which outlawed alcohol, the sale of alcohol. That was the 18th Amendment. Then we turned right around and passed the 19th Amendment, allowing the sale of alcohol. So you can see how crazy these conventions can become if there's no order, if there's no structure, there's no guidance to it. So what we have now is we have local people who are in their towns and cities and counties, and they're sending their state representatives to the state house, and they're expressing a desire to nullify. This is a very, very powerful word. If you read Civil War history, or what we call the War Between the States, or in the Deep South, we call it the recent unpleasantness.
Or the War of Northern Aggression.
The War of Northern Aggression.
Listen, I was raised in the South, and I've heard that term more than once, I can tell you.
Well, every war that's ever started in this country started in the same place, South Carolina. I include Texas and some of the other states, but I include South Carolina's Sovereignty Act because it is so powerful that it really is inspirational, and you can just listen to the very powerful Southern almost aristocracy when they apply the English language in this way. It's really, really powerful. And they led 12 other states to exercise a right, which they felt they had, to leave the Union and form their own country, which they did. The only act of, I would call it war, that they did is that they asked the Union troops, the federal troops that were occupying a fort in South Carolina called Sumter, to leave. They rowed a boat out peacefully with a white flag and told the commanding officer of Fort Sumter, along with all the troops that were there, look, you can leave peacefully. You can even take your flag with you, and you can sing your songs and even salute it on the way out. We don't care. This is the only southern territory that's occupied by federal troops. And, of course, the major who was running that fort said, well, I appreciate the honorable gesture, but you obviously know I can't do that. So they rowed the boat back across the foggy bay and commenced to shell that place for 32 hours straight. Guess what? Not one single soldier was killed. No one. No one was even injured. That fort was unbelievably tough and stood up to 32 hours straight of barrage by cannon fire. So when the smoke cleared, they surrendered. They were allowed to shoot a 100-gun salute, which unfortunately had a misfire on the 47th cannon. The cannon exploded, killing one of the Union soldiers that was manning the cannon. That was the only fatality. So they decided to cut it from 100 to 50. They only did a 50-gun salute, and then they were allowed to leave. That was it. That was the end of what was called the civil disobedience, that is, the Declaration of the Confederate States of America. Had we had federal statesmen in Washington able to solve this rift between northern interests and southern interests in a federal arrangement, that war would have never happened. And as you know, that was not the decision that was made. Lincoln decided to go to war. And so they launched an attack against the South. Well, the South took several measures to protect themselves. They changed the gauge of their railroad so that the North could not simply drive their trains into the South and supply their armies. Long story short, the North lost every single solitary battle, every skirmish, every battle the North lost, because the South felt they were right. They were on their home turf. They were proud. They were well trained. They knew their turf very well. And the North continued to lose until one battle. And now I will insert just a little bit of politics here, because this is how it's done. When a president is losing every single battle that he fights, everyone, troops are going home with their tail between their legs and huge losses. They won one battle at a place called Gettysburg. So the president commissioned a whole bunch of graves with white markers to be laid out, a stage to be built, and he created the photo op that changed the war. And then he issued a speech called the Gettysburg Address, which he thought was a big failure at the time. It's since been heralded as one of the finest speeches ever written. But if you take yourself back to that period in 1861 when that address was made, 1863, I'm sorry, you'll see he had this backdrop of all these gravestones behind him. And when he gestured to these soldiers or those souls that had lost their lives to protect this Union, he won the support of his party. And then he employed his generals to do something that only God has asked angels to do in the past. Kill everything in your path. Burn the towns to the ground, raise the fields, poison the water, kill the cattle, destroy everything in your path. And that is what won the war for the North. That is what brought the war to the...
You know, it's very interesting, and I have always been hesitant to say on the air much of, about the truth about Abraham Lincoln. Because he is thought of by the mushroom majority as one of the really great Americans. But it was Abraham Lincoln who shredded the Constitution. It was Abraham Lincoln who had people rounded up merely on the suspicion that they might have sympathies toward the South, put them in concentration camps, and kept them without charge, and kept them without a trial, no habeas corpus, and some of them died in those camps. And, you know, I hear people talk about how wonderful he is for freeing the slaves. Listen, I am absolutely opposed to slavery anywhere, anytime. There's not anything in me that can possibly support that. But Abraham Lincoln didn't free any slaves. The Emancipation Proclamation applied only to the states over which he had no jurisdiction. There were still slaves in northern states. And as a matter of fact, some at the White House at the time that he signed the Emancipation Proclamation. The man was a hypocrite. But he was very good at manipulating the media. And as you say, he invented the photo op.
Slavery in any form either, and one of the forms of slavery that was occurring in the North at the time was nigh unto indentured servitude. You had children working in factories 14 hours a day, and when they became injured, they were just discarded. There was no workman's comp. There was nothing like that. People were living in company apartments, and they ended up owing more to the mines and the mills that they worked at than they could possibly earn in a lifetime. So it was a different kind of slavery, but mm-hmm. it was the kind of slavery that we face today, the slavery of eternal debt. And I have a whole chapter that's dedicated to getting out of debt and regaining control over your own sovereignty, just like the states are doing.
But you know, some of the states are actually passing laws to make gold and silver legal tender in their states.
Utah, exactly. Utah's Sovereignty Act that they passed a couple of years ago is one of the most powerful sovereignty acts in the nation. Now, does it have a lot of teeth when they say, look, we're not going to apply any federal regulations in our state until they are ratified by our state legislature? Seriously, they don't have any teeth. These sovereignty acts are only designed to generate a court battle. But, that being said, it only takes 37 states to pass a constitutional amendment. There are now 40 states that have passed sovereignty acts, and there are more coming. Now, this sets up a very unique, specifically mechanized method for arranging, conducting, and completing a constitutional convention. It is beautiful. It's amazing. And so we went so far, I did my research, and I pulled the pieces together, and I specifically talk about the amendments that must be repealed. There are three of them. And then there are seven amendments, which are written, and they are powerful. Now, what these amendments do when they go into place is they empower the states through, and also the Congress, to break apart the agencies, break up their monopoly, and remove them from federal power. They can be there. There's a good place for the EPA. There's a good place for the FDA. There's a good place for the USDA. They're good agencies, but they must not be run by the president.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we will come back to more with Brooks Agnew after this. I will save that till after the break. But ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about before that the genre of this show is the world of the strange and unexplained. However, on issues that really impact the whole world, as long as it's not politics, we'll talk about it. We'll be back right after this. This is the Kevin Smith Show, and this is the Kevin Smith. We're talking this evening with Dr. Brooks Agnew. And when we went away for break, you had said that these amendments that you think need to be passed are amendments that would take the running of the agencies away from the president. So, okay, who would be running them? Now, I hope you're not about to say the secretaries.
No, the secretaries would go away. They would be run by the governors of the states and Congress, just the way they're supposed to be. Elected officials would run these, and they would answer to the elected officials. Right now, they do not. They're strictly run from the executive branch. Now, you're supposed to appoint these people with advice and consent of the Senate. But you and I have already seen our current president appoint two new department heads without the advice and consent of the Senate, even though the Senate was in session. That's a violation of the Constitution, but no one is ever going to bring up the case. He has just shattered a over 200-year precedent of advice and consent by the Senate for appointments of these secretaries. The president just went around them and appointed them anyway. This is unacceptable. We just cannot let this pass. But three of the amendments are very, very powerful that need to be repealed. The first is the 16th Amendment, which, of course, allows the federal government to lay and hold taxes based on income. We replace that with an amendment that allows the federal government to lay and place, lay taxes upon sales transactions. So this is a national sales tax. The rate would be set by Congress. The amendment just sets up the structure of how it would occur. Of course, this would mean the IRS would be fired. You would not have to waive your rights to privacy every April 15th. And the revenue of the country would soar through the ceiling because, A, the bureaucracy to handle all that money would be gone. B, it would be a real-time flow of cash going to the federal government that would come from everyone who buys stuff, including tourists, including our vast cash society, and including people that don't even belong in our country, illegal aliens. All of them would pay the tax. It would be a huge windfall for the federal government and a huge reduction in overhead. The second would be the elimination of the current structure we have for senators to run for office. As you know, originally it was set up that the state legislatures would appoint senators. There was some cry for cronyism, imagine that. And so an amendment was passed that allowed senators to run for election at large. I don't have a problem with that. What we add to it is term limits. We say senators can run for 3 terms and you go home. 18 years is long enough. We also have an amendment that in the book that changes the congressional term from 2 years to 4 years. This gets Congress people out of perpetual campaign mode, and we set term limits for them for 3 terms as well. 12 years and you go home. You also have the same pension plan that everyone else does. You don't have your own special pension plan. You also cannot own or trade any publicly traded stocks, not only while you're in office, but for a period of 3 years after you leave office. So they're very, very powerful. And now we have 40 states, more than enough to pass this all in a convention. We can go to convention with an Athenian, that is to say a very specific agenda of things we want to pass, things we want to repeal. We could do it, get it done, and ratify in 1 day. And the agency government would be unseated forever. It would be the largest issuance of pink slips ever.
And it the largest employer in the United States today, something like 50% of people employed, are working for this government.
Right.
So what are you going to do with the 50% unemployment rate?
Well, fortunately, now that the government isn't borrowing every single dollar that's available through the prime market, banks now have money to loan. And guess what's going to be wanting that money? There are thousands and thousands of small businesses in every state that have applied for Small Business Administration loans. They can't get them because there's no money available to borrow. The federal government has borrowed it all. So these small businesses, and some of them will employ up to 500 to 1,000 people, will provide jobs for those very federal workers that have been sitting in Washington playing ping pong back and forth with your tax money. I'll give you a couple of examples that'll just make your hair stand on end.
That'll be a cute trick. I have no hair.
Well, it's just amazing how the two... how several agencies can fight each other and end up costing the taxpayer a huge amount of money. And it's just one regulation fighting another regulation. There is no oversight. There's no representation. We now have a multi-trillion dollar bureaucracy that's consuming, get this, 63% of all the money that we produce as tax revenue is consumed by the agency government. And they produce nothing. They deliver no services, they don't educate anybody, they don't protect anybody, nothing. They do nothing. This is in addition to the national defense, in addition to social programs. 63% of every dollar is consumed in overhead by the agency government.
Well, I mean, you're being a little harsh. These people have to have a little getaway to Vegas once in a while and, $400,000 conventions, and I'm exaggerating, but still, they got to do it.
It was $822,000.
Oh, was it?
They consumed $146,000 worth of alcohol in 3 days.
Well, I think it's good, though, don't you? I mean, they're better off. It's better off for us if they're drunk.
Well, maybe, except there were a lot of businesses at that time, at that very time, trying to get their products onto the GSA schedule so they could do business with the federal government. But the GSA was out of pocket at the time. They didn't have the money or the time to spend with these businesses to list their products.
Okay, so you're talking about how there are all these small businesses that are trying to get Small Business Administration loans so they can do business. And if these amendments pass that you're talking about, as I understand what you're telling me, there would be no Small Business Administration.
Well, the Small Business Administration would exist. It just wouldn't be run by a federal secretary. It would be run by an administrator that is appointed either by the governors or by Congress. It would change branches of the government away from the executive branch and back to the legislative branch where it's supposed to be. You remember, it was Roosevelt in 1832 that put all these measures into place because the nation was broken. In 1928, when Hoover became president, 3 months after he became president, the large bankers, Dawes and Young, engineered a crash of the market. They froze money for a period of time, which caused a cascade collapse of all the banks that were hugely margined in the market. And the middle class evaporated, completely evaporated. We had dirt poor, working for 25 cents a day and all the potatoes you could carry home, and we had the mega rich floating around the world on their private steamships, moving gold and silver and oil and whatnot back and forth around the world.
Something was kind of like now.
Very much like now. In fact, the conditions for that to occur were two major recessions and a post-war recession that we did not recover from very well, and a huge inflated stock market, even though the economy wasn't doing very well. Gee, sounds like we've been through two major recessions. 2008 was the worst we've ever seen, and we have not recovered from it since. And the stock market is higher than ever. My goodness, Kevin, we are primed to pull the trigger again.
Well, this may be outside, this may be off the rails from your book, but based on, it's adjoining or at least hooked to what you just said. It, for all the world, appears to me that the people that have been sent to Washington have been working overtime for a number of years to try and force the American people into a revolution. It seems engineered. Now, I have said, don't do it. You can't win a shooting war with these people. That's not the way to win. You can't win it. They have bigger guns, more guns, and then they have the help of their buddies in the international organization known as the United Nations, who are committed to sending troops here to suppress all of that rebel stuff. Okay? And they will. They will do that. And there's no question what the response will be from the Union. We've already seen what they will do. All right. We're going to step away for a break and we'll be back. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. And Dr. Agnew is talking about his new book. I want to, especially for those who are just now joining us, again, try to help you differentiate between politics and government. We've said many times, in 2 days is the anniversary of this show, and we will have been broadcasting this show for 12 years in 2 days. And over that 12 years, I've said repeatedly that we're not going to talk about politics, and we don't, but that we would talk about things, great issues, that have a huge impact on the world. And certainly what we're talking about tonight has a huge impact on the world. Dr. Agnew is talking, as I said, about his book. It is called Alienated Nation. Now, Alienated Nation is basically a guidebook on how to rescue America. It is not about politics. Politics is about Republicans and Democrats and the Libertarian Party. It's about party stuff. This is above and beyond that. These issues exist if there were no parties. They exist now, even if the parties were out of business. So when we open up the telephone lines in a few minutes, I know because I've been doing the show for 12 years, some of you are just going to just be so overwrought that you just boil over with support for Obama, or you boil over with support for Romney, and I will cut you off the phone if you do that. I won't even warn you. Okay? I want you to call, and I want you to discuss with Dr. Agnew the ideas he's putting forward. You may think they're good ideas, you may think they're not good ideas, and it doesn't matter. Either way, you can call and express what you think and ask him a question, and we'll give him an opportunity to respond. But if you go into politics, click, you're out of here. Okay? We're not going to do politics. Now, I'll tell you another good reason. Neither Obama nor Romney are paying Kevin Smith a dime to advertise. We don't accept advertising. But they're not paying even a dime to advertise on this show, and I'm not giving them any free time, okay? Dr. Agnew, are you prepared? Are you ready to take some calls?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Open the phone lines.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you live outside of the USA or outside of Canada, you live somewhere else, we know that that number, while it works anywhere in the world, it can be a little expensive to call it from some places on the planet. So we have an additional option for you called a flash message, and the flash message is very easy. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. If you're in Canada or the USA, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Please use that and give us a call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
Brooks, I pretty much agree with what you talked about so far, but I have a couple requests.
Sure.
Ban the Electoral College. Get rid of it. Scrap it. Burn it.
Can I ask you why you have that opinion? Then I'll tell you why it's a bad idea. But go ahead. I want to hear your idea.
Then I want you to...
No. Brent. Can you hear?
Yeah.
He asked you a question.
Why? doing away with the Electoral College is a good idea.
Why do I think it's a good idea?
Yeah.
Because we had the I don't know what it was, the primary in Wyoming. Nobody knew about it.
Well, it would be even worse if you do away with the Electoral College. Only about 7 or 8 states would ever even hear a presidential candidate, because it would be by sheer popular vote. The Electoral College allows states like Tennessee and New Mexico and Wyoming and Utah to participate in national politics. If it was not for the Electoral College, that 100 senator equalizer goes away. It's all popular vote. Do you think Wyoming could hold up to Florida or New York or Texas or California? You guys would never even show up on the radar.
Okay. I'll give you that. But I do have one more request.
Mm-hmm.
Pass some amendments that would make it treasonous to take the power away from the people and to suppress technology that could help the people.
Well, it's difficult to do in amendments, but I hear what you're saying. There is an amendment that goes a long way to doing this. It's called the Save the Guard Amendment. I believe it's the 33rd or 34th amendment that I propose. And this means that the state governors will control their own state militias. And the only way the president can call up a state militia is if he gets a declaration of war. Without a declaration of war, the federal government cannot seize control of the state militias. Nobody that signed up for the National Guard, who wanted to go, a couple weekends a month and 2 weeks in the summertime, they did so for extra income, they did so to help their community, to help their nation. None of those National Guard men and women ever expected to be thrown into 2, 3, 4 tours in a foreign country and come home by the hundreds of thousands with missing limbs, not to be taken care of by the very federal government that conscribed them. They're back under state care when they come back. This is a huge flaw in our system, and it would emasculate the president's ability to call up Wars R Us, that's what I call them in the book, to call up Wars R Us anytime they want and get some political brownie points by sending a bunch of boots on the ground in some foreign country, like whether it's Kosovo or Iraq or Iran or Kuwait or Cuba or wherever they want to send them.
Yeah, it reminds me of a time I was in school in Minnesota, and this was the first Gulf War, when because a lot of the kids in that school were Army Reserve.
Right.
And when they declared war, they just about freaked.
Well, you remember now, they didn't declare war. They declared an international coalition. And Bush Sr., I must say, had a 91% approval rating when he went over to free Kuwait. The nice thing about that operation is, when they freed Kuwait, they came right home. That war was done.
Yeah.
It was finished. It was done in less than a year. Less than a year, it was over and finished. That's the whole scale up, the ramp down, and everybody came home. This, what we've been doing for the last 10 years, is completely different. This Wars R Us, what has been affectionately called the military-industrial complex, has weapons, has power, and so therefore they must have war. Wars R Us is prepared for everything, every kind of invasion you can think of, every kind of war you can think of, but they're not prepared for the absence of war.
They make money with war.
That's right. Once you have a weapon system, you don't need a war. You just need the weapon system and the will to use it.
That's right.
Okay, Brent, thank you for the call. Good points.
Very good. Thank you.
623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. You know, it's within the power of Congress to stop the Wars R Us situation now. All they have to do is amend or cancel the War Powers Act. But about the only thing of any consequence that Congress seems to pass these days is gas. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Dr. Agnew.
Go ahead, Rusty.
Okay. Who would have, what would the money be based on this new government?
Now, that's a really excellent question. One of the things that we have very clearly outlined in the book is the system of alchemy that has been used for the last few hundred years to, and alchemy, by the way, is not turning lead into gold. We explained it very well in the Ark of Millions of Years series. Alchemy is the process of making that which is worthless equal exchange for that of great value. We used to have currency based upon gold and silver. We came off the gold standard, and then we came off the silver standard. And I think it was 1971. It was way on up, most recent. And now we don't even have paper money that's reliable. The only thing that we have is the Federal Reserve, which basically computerizes money. And so money has become ones and zeros. And the problem is that you keyed on in on this exactly. We have a Europe that's about $60 to $70 trillion in debt, but there's only about $40 trillion worth of value in the system. The numbers don't work out, and they can't. So it's sort of like, I like it like this in the book. Six guys sit down to play poker. Each one of them have $1 million that they exchange for chips when they sit down. And they play cards until a time occurs when none of them can ante up. Now, I know you've seen Texas Hold'em. I have too on TV. Somebody at that table should have one big pile of chips, but all the chips are gone everywhere. They're gone in Europe. They're gone in India. They're gone in the U.S. Who has all the money? The answer is all the value has been removed from the system. And that's exactly what needs to be put back. You keyed in on it exactly. We need a value-based monetary system, not simply a paper contract to pay.
Okay, thanks. That makes sense to me. I mean, now, how long do we have for the safe zone?
What's a safe zone?
Well, you mentioned that we can still get out of this trouble, you know, and I assume that there's a time when we won't be able to get out of it if we let it go long enough.
I would say, based on what I have, you know, learned from watching politics of late, watching the political situation of late, that this election is so key, I could not let the book sit, you know, on the file drawer any longer. I had to finish it. I think this election is the key. I think this November, this election doesn't need to be close. Because if it is close, and I mentioned this in the book, especially in the foreword, and Kevin can read you this part, all the votes are being counted by computerized methodologies, and enough software exists that all those votes could be flipped. So if the election is close, 1% or 2% apart, I think we're done. This election needs to be a huge statement toward liberty. I also mention in the book this movement that was started by Ron Paul in 2007 when he ran for president the first time. It wasn't necessarily the man. It was the message of liberty, the message that we were going in the wrong direction. Well, it didn't really catch hold in this country, although it did start the Tea Party, which has been for all of our amusement. But it did go overseas, and I happened to be in Egypt at the time when those young people decided to Twitter their phones and march into the streets and say, enough. We're going to take what this man has said in the United States, and we're going to do it here. We're going in the streets, and we're not leaving until this president is gone. And he was gone. And that is the spirit of what we're seeing in our governmental system right now. It's not just the people in Occupy that are out in the streets. It's also in the governor's mansions. And these governors and these legislators are really taking the bull down. So this is the time. We don't have a huge window. We have about 6 to 8 months to get this done.
So how does someone go, get involved? Obviously, at the state level right now, they're probably just as bad as the federal. How do we get involved to change this system?
They're not as bad as the federal, I will tell you that. State politics is much more volatile. You don't find career politicians on the state level. The state is much more close to the breast. We know what's going on in our local neighborhoods, in our city councils, in our mayors, and in our mayor's councils. So state government is very volatile compared to federal government. Once you're in the federal government, you can hide behind walls of bureaucracies, and you have unlimited resources at your disposal. Not so in the states. How you can get involved, there are three ways. One is to get yourself personally prepared, which we have a chapter in the book called The Home Repair Kit. The second is to try to get involved in your governmental system. Go to city council meetings. This is how we train Boy Scouts with their communication merit badge. We have citizenship in the community, citizenship in the nation, citizenship in the world awards. This is how we get our young people involved. Go to a city council meeting. Sit in on it. Listen to what's going on. Get involved and be involved in your local stuff. The third is an organization that I mentioned in the book called the Get Out of Our House, the G-O-O-O-H organization. This is a grassroots organization. It's apolitical. That is to say, it can be any political party at all. But these people make a compact that they will represent their communities when they get to Washington. Kind of a novel idea when you think about federal politics, isn't it? And those are the three main ways that I discuss in the book.
Alrighty, thanks.
Thanks for the call. You mentioned that this election is critical and that it cannot be close because of the fact that these votes are being counted electronically. What about the possibility that this election has already, the results of this election have already been determined because these votes are going to be counted electronically, but not in the United States. They're going to be counted in Spain by a company owned by George Soros.
Well, that's a very legitimate worry. Those of you that read the book, and you'll know this, but if you don't know it, I'm going to explain it to you. There's a software company called SOE. SOE writes the software that communicates with all these electronic voting machines and precincts around this country. SOE was purchased last year by a foreign company called Skytl, S-C-Y-T-L. It is owned by three venture groups. I have looked up the boards on those three venture groups. George Soros is a member of one of those venture groups. The key to remember here is that venture capital groups are designed to create a return on investment for those investors. And so they have to do what it is that their shareholders want them to do to make the company successful. The other key is that none of these venture groups are American. So all of our votes are being tallied by foreign companies. Now, I also put very critical congressional testimony that was recently collected by a computer programmer who worked for the Secretary of State of Florida. And he was assigned to write software that would take the voting machine information from the voting machines in Florida, flip the vote to the other candidate, and then write code back to the voting machine so that when they did the audit between the machine and the state tallies, they would match. And then the software would erase the code. That's how crafty it was. Now, what keeps it...
Let me just say to the caller, just hang on. We're going to get to you in just a moment. Go ahead.
Yeah, so hold on. The trick is that we have one thing in this country that allows us to have a sort of check and balance. It's called an exit poll. Normally, the exit polls are within 2 or 3% of what's going on at the polls. It might not tell the difference between a close election, but if you have a 5 or 10% difference between the exit polls and what's going on in the machines, that's when you know something's going wrong. That's when they can't get away with it. You have to have an overwhelming majority in order to upset these electronic voting tricks.
Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Jim from Ohio.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Hi, Brooks.
Hi, Jim.
Brooks, you've got some really good ideas. And I believe they would work. But the only trouble is people keep electing the same mushroom heads election after election. And that is what puts a monkey wrench in the whole deal.
It could, except this would not happen on a federal level, Jim. This would happen on a state level. And we already have 40 governors that have signed into law sovereignty acts. There are already enough states to make this happen. A constitutional convention doesn't happen on a federal level. It happens on a state level.
Well, I hope your ideas work, because they really sound good.
Thank
and
you.
I believe they would help this country a whole lot.
Well, it would sure set an example for the rest of the world, too. I mean, if the Egyptians can pour into the streets and take a beating and a gassing and a starving over the last year in Tahrir Square and throw their government out. Now, they still don't have a good government in place, but at least they threw the old one out. We don't want to see that happen in this country. We don't need to have that happen in this country. We have the oldest and finest constitution in the history of the world, and it works. It has a mechanism for fixing this non-violently. Not a broken window, not a piece of trash in the street, not a foul word. This could be done in a very organized, very swift manner, and it would empower the judicial branch, which is our Supreme Court, to allow Congress to re-control the agencies that they lost control of 81 years ago.
Okay.
That sounds good, but the Constitution has been so eroded. I don't know if your ideas would really work or not.
Well, the Constitution has only been amended 27 times. 17 of those were the original ones. So it's only been amended 10 times since it was actually ratified in 1785. So it is a pretty stable document. Now, laws and interpretation of law has, I would say, eroded some things. Certainly the Department of Homeland Security, this new National Defense Authorization Act, are amazingly unconstitutional.
We have to step away for a break. Jim, thank you for the call. And folks, we'll be back right after this break.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have a caller on hold. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew, and right after this caller, we have a flash message from Mickey in Germany, an American living in Germany, and I have a reply. It's addressed to me, and I have a reply for you, Mickey. Stand by. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling? Okay, we're not hearing you. Let me push another button. Try it again. Your first name and from where are you calling? Caller, I am sorry, but your phone is just not putting out a signal. We hear static. try calling us back. Meanwhile, I'll enter Mickey. Mickey sent me a fairly large flash message, so I'm going to summarize it. Mickey says that it sounds to him as if I am still fighting the Civil War, and that I'm pro-South, and that people like me basically should not be on the radio. Okay. Mickey, have you lost your ever-loving mind, or did you ever have one? You must not be aware of the fact my wife is not white. My wife is brown. I am not in favor. He mentions that it sounded like I wish that slavery was still an institution. Look, my wife is the light of my life. I love my wife and my son. We have a little son. He's 7 years old. And you got to be out of your mind to think that I would be in favor of slavery. I just told you the truth about a scoundrel who shredded the Constitution and is hailed as one of the great presidents in our history. He was not a great president. He was an enemy of the Constitution. He was a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States of America. That is my opinion. Thus saith the Kevin. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Caller, we are still just getting static out of your telephone. That's all.
Sounds like a magic jack.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with your telephone. I'm sorry. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. If you would like to give us a call, please do, and we will give you the opportunity to talk to Dr. Agnew, and we will give you the opportunity to make a statement or ask a question. Yeah, Brooks, you know me, and you know there's just absolutely no possibility that I'm in favor of slavery simply because I told a fact of history. I'm not in favor of slavery.
The whole idea of what we're talking about tonight is the sovereignty of the human soul, you know, while we're in mortal form. We all should have the right to achieve our greatest potential.
Absolutely.
And it is not the right, it is not the purpose of government or any other organization to suppress that individual right to see that we reach our greatest potential. But that is the organization that we have in place now, and it is self-perpetuating.
Mm-hmm.
Have agencies in our government that are clearly unconstitutional, but they can't be declared so because it, in the way it's set up now, it takes litigation in order to make that rise to the level of the Supreme Court to reach an adjudication. In the case of the National Defense Authorization Act, you don't get your day in court. You don't get your habeas corpus. You don't get your call to your lawyer. You are arrested, not charged, and deported, and you're gone.
All expense paid trip to Guantanamo.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hey, you know what? Now, this is a different caller, and we're getting the same thing. I think that means it's my equipment. So, let's see. Hang on. And let me unplug something and plug something back in. All right, caller, give it a try now, and let's see if we can hear you.
All right, Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Okay, so Steve, hang on. To the other caller, apparently it was just a connection that just was tired of connecting. When Steve gets through, you call us back. We do want to hear from you. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. These all sound like splendid ideas, Dr. Agnew. There is, however, an issue I have with the Federal Reserve, the international banking cartel that controls our purse strings in so many ways and on so many levels, and has so many of our judges and our politicians in their hip pocket. The presidents who have attempted to circumvent the Federal Reserve have all wound up dead. And I feel that we can never be truly a free nation until we have rid ourselves of this institution. Does any of these proposals deal with getting rid of the Federal Reserve?
Well, unfortunately, that's not a constitutional organization, nor is it under the Constitution, under the purview of the Constitution. But you make a very good point that presidents that have tried to do away with it have been undone in more ways than one. Sometimes they assume room temperature. So, and there's been a huge conflict of interest lately, and in that the Federal Reserve has actually been buying U.S. debt. So not only are they setting our monetary policy, they're also buying our debt, which is kind of a Ponzi scheme. So what do we do to stop that? How do we correct that? The way that we correct that is we get our nation out of debt. And that has to occur two ways. One, we have to increase revenue, which means not higher taxes. Heavens no. We need more taxpayers. We need more people earning a living. And the second is, we need to send out some pink slips. Like any corporation that finds itself bloated with employees, we need to go floor by floor through these agencies, once we get control of them through this state organization, and we need to start firing people. We don't need a Department of Education. We don't need a Department of Commerce. We don't need lots of these departments can go away. Things that were set up in Roosevelt's day are now not a problem anymore. We don't need those kinds of welfare systems in place anymore. This can be handled on a state level much more efficiently. Why would you take money taken from the states to the federal government, send it back to the very states that gave it to you, of course shaving about 40% off the top, and hope to have anything that's even close to efficiency? You can't. So that is how you get rid of the Federal Reserve, is you get the nation out of debt. That's how you take the Federal Reserve out.
I don't see how that closes the Federal Reserve, though, when they are the source of all our money. You know, if the federal government wants a dollar, it doesn't tax me. You know, the federal government's dollar doesn't come out of my hip pocket. It comes from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve prints the money. The federal government borrows it at something like 11%, thus creating, you know, this humongous debt when you're talking about trillions of dollars. And the taxes that you and I pay only are applied to the interest on that god-awful debt that we've got. And this is an unconstitutional organization, yet it prints all our money, and it has a stranglehold on this nation that, we don't need to pretend that we're ever going to be free as long as the Federal Reserve and the international banking cartel who run it continue to control us.
Now that aspect of it, you're absolutely right. Congress is supposed to have the right to mint money. They have abdicated that right to the Federal Reserve. They simply need to take it back.
How do you get Congress to suddenly grow a pair when they have absolutely abdicated any kind of representation of the people that elected them for the past 20 years?
Got a clean house. You got to go in and you got to empty out those dynasties. You got to get rid of the Schumers and the Waters and the, you know, people that have been sitting there for 20, 30, sometimes 40 years running a fiefdom in Washington. You have to gut the place. You got to completely change hands. Anybody that's over three terms, get rid of them.
Okay, but you see, that depends upon the American people being anything but mushrooms.
Well, but people that listen to your program are not mushrooms.
No, they're not. They're not. I'm sorry for butting in like that, Steve. But, I mean, when we start talking about Congress doing something that is right, I mean, that's like asking Satan to attend church and become the priest. I mean, that's these people are absolutely worthless.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Kevin. You don't need to worry about butting in because you were speaking my mind. And let me just say, I mean, for what my opinion's worth, you know, everybody's got one. I think your book and your process here, all your thought that went into it, is certainly a wonderful and an optimistic thought process, Dr. Agnew. But I fear that we're already so far down the road. I just don't see us pulling out of this this nosedive. And I hate to end it on a pessimistic note like that, but I do thank you for the work that went into it. I wish you all success, and thank you, Kevin, for another wonderful show.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
Well, I would read two books in order then. I would read Remembering the Future first, and then Alienated Nation, and that will change your mind, Steve. There is a way to do this, and we have time to do it, and we certainly have the energy to do it. Look at the people that are responding all over the world, taking huge personal risk against, you know, entracted bureaucracies way worse than ours. And they're having success. We can do it.
Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Agnew.
Jerome.
My question to you is, if there's already 40 governors that passed the Sovereignty Act, and it takes less over 30 to pass a constitutional convention, why haven't they called for a constitutional convention yet?
I think this man deserves a free book, because that is exactly the right question, Jerome. Exactly. 40 governors have passed sovereignty acts. We only need 37 to do a two-thirds, according to the Constitution, ratification of the Constitution. So why haven't they acted yet? Why hasn't a South Carolina or a Utah or a Tennessee or a Minnesota or a Texas, you know, Governor Perry's the longest-serving governor in the entire country, why hasn't a governor stood up and said, this is enough? We are calling for a constitutional convention. We're calling our congressman home, and we are going to do this thing. That is a great question. I don't know the answer to it.
I think I know the answer to that. When Perry was faced with signing a bill that would kick the TSA, no, it wouldn't kick the TSA out. It would just simply say they couldn't do the grope on a rope. He was told exactly what was going to happen. Now, we're going to take a break. Jerome, you hang on. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this, and I will continue with that. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let me check, Jerome, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Kevin.
Okay. You had asked a question, why haven't these states already called for a constitutional convention? And Dr. Agnew, you said that's a great question. You don't know why. Look, when Governor Perry had legislation, it was working its way toward being voted on, that would tell the TSA they couldn't grope you. And by the way, the type of search they do routinely would be a felony if a policeman did it to you and you were not already under arrest. It would be a felony charge against the policeman if he did that and you were not already under arrest. Now, once you're under arrest, he does have a right to thoroughly pat you down to make sure you're not hiding weapons, but he can't do what they do unless you're under arrest. So they've been given the authority to do what it's a felony for a police officer to do. You go do that to somebody and see if you don't get charged with a felony.
Bring up a good point, and Perry had to back down because the Department of Homeland Security and the TSA said, well, that's fine, you can stop us from groping, but your planes will not take off. You will not get into American airspace unless we grope all your passengers.
And that, you know, here's what I don't understand. That's fine because Texas is not a state.
Well, the bottom line is Perry backed down. But here's the good news. The good news is that Florida turned right around and did the same thing, except they said, we'll use our own state airport employees to do the same procedures that meet the regulations, but your TSA agents are out of here. They're ejecting the TSA agents from their airports.
Yeah.
And Florida's not alone. Other states are going to join her.
Well, and, you know, if the USSA wants to say that, fine, then you can't fly into American airspace, you know, then it certainly is going to hurt the economy of what's left in the USSA.
Well, don't you find it amazing that as this is gaining steam in Florida and other states are drafting similar legislation, the TSA is the most despised government organization that we have, and it violates the Quarters Act, which is one of the amendments that was made to the Constitution, the original Constitution. The grievances against Britain was that we had to quarter British troops in our towns to watch over us. Well, the TSA is the same thing, exactly the same thing. It is so unconstitutional, it isn't funny. But that doesn't mean that the safety procedures that are being done by them cannot and are not necessary.
They're not. They're not. Because, now I'm not saying that security measures are not necessary. Security measures are necessary. But the groping of a 90-year-old lady in a wheelchair, the groping of a 7-month-old baby, strip searching a seven-month-old baby, this is crap. Not necessary.
Don't you find it interesting that today they paraded around the new mysterious, more sophisticated underwear bomb so that they could justify groping? Why don't they just say, okay, that's it, you can't wear underwear while you fly?
Yeah, well, they asked me one time if I was wearing briefs or boxers after they had done an x-ray, and I said, well, you just shot a picture, what did you see?
I always like to say to the guy as I go through the body scanner, you know, the good news about today is I get to walk away from this machine, and you don't.
Yeah. Okay, Jerome, we butted in. Did you have another question or comment?
The only other thing I wanted to state is I agree with Steve that the Federal Reserve is the root of the money problem. And if these conventions would go through, basically I think that would just give them the right to get rid of the Federal Reserve and print our own money.
Yep. You know, Thomas Jefferson would agree with you, and Hamilton would not. Hamilton tried to get a national bank going to control all the currency, and he almost won. Fortunately, he did not. Thomas Jefferson won, and that's why we had decentralized banking for about 200 years in this country. And then, slowly but surely, state banks turned into multi-state banks, and now we have national banks, and now we have world banks. And it's only a matter of time before they get complete control of the alchemical system. I think Utah has the right idea. They created a new script outside the system, and that is now being used for all state major transactions.
So Utah has its own money.
Utah has its own coinage. They can't make paper money, but they can print coins or mint coins, and that's what they're doing. And other states are going to follow.
Well, I think that's a step in the right direction.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I think what we outlined in the Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, in the chapter called The Return of the Watchers, was the distillation of world currencies into less than half a dozen, three, and then two, and then it will only be a matter of time before there's a single currency. It's all digital, and those that agree with the state get to buy, sell, and trade, and those that do not are excluded from the system.
All right, Jerome, I want to thank you for the call. You know, as upset as I get and as obviously boiled over as I get about the complete and total betrayal of the American people by this Congress, which is, that's my opinion. I think both houses and both parties have betrayed the American people and have sold this country out. And as boiled over as I get about that, I want to say again that resorting to violence to remedy this is the wrong approach. It's the one I think they want you to resort to so they can declare martial law. And then they can NDAA your butt and get you out of here.
Yeah, violence is, there's no call for violence. We have a system. It works. We have a process. It's beautiful. It's almost divine in its nature, if not divine. And we need to use it. We do not need to do any kind of violence whatsoever. This can all be done within the constraints of the Constitution.
All right, we are just about out of time, Brooks. I want to thank you for being with us again. And your new book actually sort of hit the market today, right?
That's right. It went live on Amazon this week. The audio version is now uploaded, so all of your listeners that buy it will not only get an autographed paper book from my website, alienatednation.com, but they will get the audio version for free. So if they're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you.
There you go. How about that? And that's especially good for those living abroad who, although you speak English, find it difficult to read English. And I know how that is. I speak Serbian. Ja govorim srpski sve. But it's very difficult for me to, I can read it, but I'm slow when I read it. I can read it, but I'm slow. And that's true also of Spanish. Yo hablo español. But reading it is difficult. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the other languages I speak. I speak them, but reading is another thing. So being able to hear it is a good thing. Brooks, I want to thank you for being with us, as I said. And if you will, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this flight of this starship in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, Brooks Agnew. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you, well, you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.